supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, something a little bit different. A treatise on how to dry the many types of hydrangea flowers that a listener set in, giving me the week off and you some decent information for a change. Before that, lots of your fabulous phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Michael, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Well, thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Michael. How are you doing, sir?
I am doing wonderful in 70-degree weather in November.
We all love that, don't we? Where is Michael enjoying Indian summer?
Traverse City, Michigan.
Ah, a fine area up north. What can we do for you, Mike?
Well, every year I get a fern, and I try to take care of it as best I can. And this year, I have a rock star fern. If Cousin It were a botanical, it would be this fern. I call it Mr. Fantastic. I'm 6'3" tall, and this thing, the fronds are as long as I am. And I just want to know how to keep this through the winter.
Okay, let's go back to your original very interesting statement of every year I get a fern.
Well, there's a little old woman that lives in Empire, Michigan. It's just west of here. And she sells ferns every spring out in her front yard, and I always buy one. So then when fall comes around and it starts to get cold, I move them inside. But it turns out to be like a Christmas tree. Within a couple of weeks, they're dropping leaves everywhere, and I have to sadly put them to pasture. And so I want to make sure it gets through the winter, but I do not know how to do that.
And, yeah, so you have a Jurassic Park fern.
Yes, absolutely.
Now, does she sell the same basic style of, quote, fern every spring, or does she have, like, a whole bunch of different ones out there?
It's the exact same kind every year.
And how does she prefer them to you? Are they already potted? Does she throw them into your car as you drive away? What's the deal here?
They are in small terracotta pots, and then I move them into a larger pot when I get home.
And do you have any idea as to what she recommends for this? Is there a chance that they're hardy?
She is not, what's the word I'm looking for here to be polite? She's not necessarily all there. And so speaking with her, she'll, if you ask her anything about the fern, she'll start talking about her cat.
Right.
And so I just basically buy the fern, I hug her, and I leave. I know nothing about the fern. I've been researching, trying to find what it is.
Right.
And I cannot find anything about it.
And you didn't go back to ask the cat?
No, I don't. I've never even seen a cat.
Oh, okay. Well, I think the cat is the key to this entire mystery here.
Excellent.
Now,
yes.
Now, this is no longer in a little terracotta pot, Mike. How many times did you repot it over the growing season?
Just one other time.
So you put it into a medium-sized pot and then into this big pot?
Yeah, once I saw what it was doing,
right,
I put it into a larger pot.
And what was the root system like when you did that?
It was bald. It was tight. Had I let it go a little longer, it probably would have broken through like Audrey too.
Right, right, the man-eating plant. What do we have here in terms of indoor? You have a house with house plants, or do your house plants all die like your Christmas trees and ferns?
No, I don't have anything in the house right now, but I do have a small southern-facing window. I'm in a cabin in the woods, so I'm surrounded by trees.
That's why your fern's a rock star, man. They don't.
Yeah, I mean, it gets very little sun.
Yes, and that's what they prefer. So no south-facing window.
Okay.
I'm going to suggest we split the difference. I'm going to suggest you take this thing out of its pot. Do you own a machete?
I do.
Excellent, excellent. My favorite gardening tool. I want you to be samurai horticulturalist. I want you to split this root ball in half. I want you to plant half outdoors in a nice protected area. kind of close to the house where it gets some shade, just plant it into the soil itself, and then repot the other half back into your pot, bring it indoors, and just give it ambient light, not direct light. Don't put it anywhere near a heat source, near any kind of heat vent or fireplace or anything like that. And I want you to go out and get a simple spritzer and mist it down every morning.
Okay.
The indoor one. And who okay. knows, you may get lucky and both may survive, but we're going to find out this year if it's winter hardy.
Okay. When I take the machete and cut it in half, am I allowed to make samurai noises?
Yes, of course, you must.
Okay, good.
All right, Michael.
I want to thank you very much, and I will let you know what happens.
Go out and do it for the glory of the emperor.
Thank you very much.
Good luck, sir.
Oh, thank you. Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Karen, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for being had, Karen. Where are you?
Well, I live in Delaware, and my father, who was visiting, we were listening to your show last week, and he was looking at the fall foliage. We had a question. He lives in Daytona Beach, Florida.
Right.
And his question is, how does he combat St. Augustine fungus in his grass?
Well, he has St. Augustine grass, I'm presuming.
And oh, yes.
Have you seen it?
Yes, I have.
And what does it look like?
It has, like, brown spots, and some areas have brown patches, and it looks like it's been eaten, mm-hmm. but it's mostly the brown spots.
Okay, so there are two things that come to mind about St. Augustine. Is your dad treating his lawn, or does he have a chemical lawn care company come by?
He treats it himself. He recently purchased, I think it was like Scott's lawn fungus care.
Yeah, nothing you buy in a bag or something like that is ever going to get rid of a disease in your lawn. If it is a disease, and just throwing stuff at it will probably make the situation worse.
Really?
Yeah.
Because one part of his lawn, he resodded
mm-hmm.
and just wanted to start all over fresh. But he's afraid that whatever was killing the grass before on the other side is going to reach the new part.
Right. But now I'm confused because now it sounds like the part that looks terrible might have been the better of the two. So I think this is just a question of poor lawn care. So
okay.
he treats it himself. But see, I wish we had him here so that I could ask him what he uses on it normally and how he cuts it.
Yes, his English is not very clear, so he okay. wanted me to call in for him, and that's why I'm calling in. He normally uses just well water. He doesn't use any fertilizer. He doesn't treat it with anything. He just cuts it weekly with his lawn care. I think he waters it every morning.
Oh, okay. Okay, good. So he's,
I don't know if that helps.
You've told me everything I need to know. So he probably does have a kind of a fungus, but really what's going on is he's rotted the lawn with frequent watering. One of the things that people, it's hardest for them to understand about plants is that even though, yes, they need water, they also need to dry out between waterings. And very few people water their lawns correctly. He has to stop watering every day, and he can only water first thing in the morning. Because it's so humid down there, if you leave a lawn sit wet overnight, it's definitely going to catch a cold. And then the other thing is he has to feed this lawn. One of the other things people don't understand about gardening down south is, oh, everything grows well. It's so fertile. Well, the long growing season down there just leaches organic matter out of the soil like mad. So typically down south, lawns, garden crops, anything that really needs to be fed a little more frequently than up in the north where we get to take the winter off. For instance, my old line of 2 inches of compost is all any plant needs for the entire season. Well, that's mm-hmm. true of Pennsylvania, Delaware, New Jersey, New York. But you get down to Florida, and we're talking double that. We're talking 4 inches. Now, I know his soil is sandy. It doesn't hold nutrients well. Compost may be really hard to find down there, but the best food he could give his lawn would be something natural, some form of a composted manure, any of the manures, or compost. Otherwise, a gentle organic fertilizer or corn gluten meal. Now, and you feed warm season lawns differently than ours. You only feed a warm season lawn when it's actively growing. So when it's really green and growing. Now, when he cuts the lawn, does he bag the clippings?
No, he doesn't.
Okay, good.
So he leaves it there.
He's got to water only in the morning, once or twice a week, and then once the grass greens up again really well next season, start gently feeding it. St. Augustine grass should be cut like a northern grass. It should be 3 inches high when he's done cutting it, and leave the clippings on the lawn. And I guarantee these problems will resolve without him having to use any kind of a product.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
All right, Karen. Good luck.
Thanks. Have a wonderful day.
You
Bye-bye.
Too. Well, it's time for me to take a little break and go out and shred more of those wonderful fall leaves. Half to use as earthworm encouraging mulch next season, and half to use as the dry browns in my copious containers of compost right now. But don't go plugging in your blower vac just yet, because we'll be right back with great ways to dry hydrangeas and more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, makers of Biotone Starter Plus for new transplants, full of beneficial microbes and mycorrhiza for deeper roots and stronger plants. Espoma, a natural in the garden since 1929. And by Harvest Right. Harvest Right's home freeze dryer allows you to preserve your own freeze-dried food that can last 25 years. Meat, fruit, vegetables, and ice cream can be freeze-dried at home. More at harvestright.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up a little later in the show, I'm going to sit back and let a listener write the question of the week for us as she reveals her secrets on how to dry the many types, colors, and varieties of hydrangea blooms. It's even holiday-oriented. It doesn't get any better than that. Except for these fabulous phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Sierra, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi.
Hello, Sierra. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I am just ducky today. Thank you. Where is Sierra good?
I live in Chickasha, Oklahoma.
Whoa. Now, is that in the Oklahoma City area?
It's like actually 40 minutes southeast or southwest of Oklahoma City.
Okay. What can we do for Sierra in Oklahoma?
Well, I have a problem with trumpet vines. Oh, bad.
I'll bet you do. Did you plant this monster?
No, I moved into a house and they are all along the side fence. And I don't mind them being over there, you know, the bees love them, whatever. But then they start coming up around my house. And I have cedar siding on my house.
Oh man,
yeah, they're destroying the siding on my house.
So for those who don't know, trumpet vine was the original inspiration for the broomstick in Mickey as the Sorcerer's Apprentice and Walt Disney's Fantasia. This thing just comes up everywhere, and when you start to hack away at it, that just encourages it, right?
Yeah, it's bad.
Do you have any idea how old this plant was?
It's pretty well established.
Right.
It looks like it's been there for a long time.
And you would not buy another house where you saw a trumpet vine outside now, would you?
Yeah, no.
Really, the only answer for these kind of plants, which keep regenerating from the cut stumps, is what we call the rope-a-dope method. And that's just to go out in the spring and cut them off at ground level. And then, as you know, they're all going to grow back.
Yeah.
So you wait until they first begin to produce leaves, and then you cut them back again. At the end of the season, you'll probably wonder, this isn't working. I need to do something disastrous. But you do it again the second year. You just stay with it. This is your new hobby. But what you're doing is you're exhausting the root system. You're forcing the plant to expend energy, and it can only restore that energy through photosynthesis. So as soon as the leaves start to open up, that's when you whack it back again. So it had to go run a mile, but then you knocked dinner out of its hands. And about the middle of the second summer, you're going to notice that it's really struggling. And by the third season, what comes up out of the ground is going to look like a vine. It's going to look like morning glory. It's going to be so skinny. And that's when you finish it off. But that's really the only way to do it without chemicals that are very damaging to the environment and don't have a good track record. I know there's some people who would tell you to use a very specific herbicide that's well known in America and to paint the stumps so that the systemic herbicide goes down to the roots. But what we hear from our listeners is that it doesn't stop Godzilla. It just comes up in another area, because if you had X-ray vision, you would see this extensive root system down there. But no plant can survive the rope-a-dope method. You just have to stay with it for a couple of seasons. And it may seem obvious, but I'll point it out anyway, is don't feed any plants in the area. You know, if this is growing next to a lawn, don't feed the lawn. If it's growing next to a bed of flowers, make sure you don't make that area very nutritious. You know, don't give the vine anything to eat. And especially don't let it reach the flowering stage, much less have any good leaves on it. It is real easy to get discouraged, but I have actually beat the world's worst weeds with this method. And it almost seems to follow the same path no matter what the weed. The first year, it seems like you're wasting your time. Middle of the second year, its eyes start to close over and it starts to bleed from the nose. And then the third year, it doesn't have anything left.
Nice.
Oh, and by the way, when you get to the third year, when it's coming up really brawny and looking sick and everything, that's when you can then, especially in your environment, just turn to straight white vinegar. And make sure you use eye protection and don't use anything weaker than straight white vinegar. But if you could get what's called horticultural vinegar, which is twice as strong as the stuff they sell in the grocery store. But again, the idea is to knock them back, sap their energy, and then hit them with something that's going to finish them up. and something that's very safe for the environment. Just make sure you don't get any in your eyes.
Well, awesome. I'll have to just, I guess, stick with it. And yeah, because I've tried putting, like, lava rock all over it and the plastic all over it.
Nah.
Cover it up, and it just, yeah, it's just.
Yeah, no, it's just laughing at you then.
Yeah.
All right, good luck, Sierra. I think you could do this.
Well, thank you so much.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Ken, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you, Mike. How are you doing today?
I am doing just ducky. Ken, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well, thank you.
And where is Ken doing well?
I'm doing well in Cecil County, Maryland, about 45 minutes southwest of Philly.
What can we do for Ken in Maryland?
Well, I had two questions, actually. One, I've got a forsythia that just went absolutely crazy this growing season. And I was curious about trimming it back because it's wild. It's about 6 feet tall and 6 feet around.
Yeah.
And at the beginning of the season, it was maybe 3. So I wanted to know when I needed to trim it back, how much I need to trim it back. So I'd like it to be a little more full than crazy.
Well, you know, that's one of the problems with forsythia, Ken. In all seriousness, this is what they look like. This is not a plant that takes a cultivated pruning, you know, that lends itself to topiary. I mean, this is a plant that always left alone will do a dramatic imitation of Don King's hair. And that's the habit of the plant. You know, that's what makes it such a great screening plant. Now, the God's honest answer is you can't kill forsythia. You can't harm forsythia. You could drop a nuclear device on forsythia, and it would only slow it down for a short period of time. So you can prune this plant any time of year and not kill it. However, every inch of that plant that you're seeing now is going to be covered with remarkable yellow blooms in the early spring. And these flowers are especially attractive for a variety of beneficial insects that prey on real problematic things like Japanese beetles. So anything that you would prune away now, you would get rid of the reason why people grow forsythia. But after it blooms in the spring, then you can cut it back to like 2 feet. And for the next month, 6 weeks, maybe 2 months tops, you can continue to take out the longest shoots. But once we get into like June, early July, then you should stop so that it can set some buds for the following year. The time to get it under control is right after it finishes blooming, and then you can prune it every other day for the next 6 weeks.
Okay. And I've got one other one since I have my guru of all things organic with me right now.
Go ahead.
My wife and I have 2 raised garden beds, about 2.5 feet wide by 5 feet long. And this year we grew cucumbers, eggplant, okra, some different varieties of tomatoes, and we're thinking of adding squash and zucchini next year. One of the beds gets sun from sunrise to about 4 in the afternoon, and the other one gets sun until about noon. And we were just wondering about placements. We kind of overcrowded, and well, we really overcrowded.
Yeah.
And we were just wondering about placement and, you know, the amount of sun these different ones need and
okay,
where we might best orient them.
Right. So the bottom line is you probably need to build a couple of more beds. Because the bed that gets the most sun, that's the bed that would be best for all of the fruiting crops you named. Eggplant, tomatoes, cucumbers, things like that. Plants that produce fruits, they need all of that sun until like 4 in the afternoon. But you also have to be careful. You have to remember exactly where you put your tomato plants in the ground. Because you can't grow in those same spots repeatedly. You can move them to other parts of the bed, but you don't want to grow in the exact same spot. So that's going to limit you greatly, and I would really think about looking for places to build a couple more raised beds? Because you really don't want to be overcrowding. You'll get a much better harvest with plants that are spaced well than you will from plants that are falling all over each other and shading each other. Now, in the bed that doesn't get the most sun, that's a bed where I would grow potatoes and beets and carrots and other root crops and leafy crops that don't need as much sun.
Okay, yeah, we wanted to branch out and do carrots and radishes.
That's over in the less sun bed.
Gotcha. All right, well, thank you so much for your help, and I'll be calling when I screw something up next year.
All right, we'll look forward to that. Good luck.
Thanks a lot, Mike. Have a good day.
You too, sir. 1-888-346-9499. Jacob, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
How are you doing, Mike?
I am doing just fine today. Jacob, how are you, sir?
Oh, I'm doing well. Just getting ready for the fall and winter cleanups for customers here in Oklahoma City and Midwest City area.
Okay.
Central Oklahoma.
What are your customers of?
They're customers of maintaining flower beds, pruning, mowing lawns, upkeep of turf.
And do they call you Jacob or do they call you Jake?
They call me Jake.
So, Jake, you know that I don't support fall pruning as part of the cleanup process.
Yes, and I understand that completely, that you don't want to actually cause an open wound during the time that it's either going to be cold or going to be getting cold soon. You know, with that said, I do smaller branches that aren't really anything I believe that would really hurt the tree.
Well, you know, the later in the season you can delay that, the better off the tree is going to be.
Right. But mainly what I wanted to talk to you about, Mike, was you had a lady in Oklahoma City that had sandy soil, and she was having a tough time getting grass or anything to grow in the soil. And you guys had mentioned tree clippings, like a ground up to mulch type of
tree. Actually, what she had, and that was the show where I had my friends Lee Reich and Howard Garrett on with me, is
exactly. She
had a weed that you're very familiar with, the sandbur.
Yes.
And Howard correctly guessed that the sandburrs were popping up in her worst soil, her driest soil, her soil with no nutrition. And that's when she said, yeah, it's only on the sides of the driveway, and that's the worst area we have. And Howard suggested that she just keep adding organic matter to that area until it got a little bit more fertile. And his experience is when you add some fertility, the sandburrs go away, and then the more wanted grasses can move in. And I think all three of us together thought she should just pile wood chips on the area to first kill the sandburrs, to smother them, and then as those wood chips decompose, to create fertile soil for a succession planting.
So they will decompose, and with that, are they going to put some nutrients back into the sandy soil?
Well, you know,
is that kind of the idea?
Yes, exactly. Wood is very nutritious, but all the nutrients are locked up because it's a very dense carbonaceous material. Okay. And obviously wood chips don't decompose as quickly as shredded leaves. But I've had friends drop off big piles of wood chips at my place. And after 2 or 3 years, the bottom of those piles is compost that looks just as nice as I get from my shredded leaves in a season.
Okay. Well, to kind of talk about the caller, you know, she was from Oklahoma City, I believe.
Yes.
And I'm in Midwest City, which is right next door to Oklahoma City. And the city of Midwest City, actually, once a week, they go throughout the city and they pick up tree branches that residents have left out on the curb for the city to pick up. What the city does is they actually take them and grind them up, and then there is an area that they go and they dump all of that stuff, and it's basically a mountain of wood chips.
Right, and this is something that we keep reminding our listeners these municipal composting sites are great mm-hmm. local resources. I have exactly the same thing. Almost every area I've appeared in around the country has the same thing. You can go to these municipal sites if you're a resident, and mm-hmm. in one area you can get finished compost, and in another area you can get wood chips. I think our answer was Lee was really being lazy, and he said he just puts a sign up at the end of his driveway so for the tree trimming crews to just dump them there so that he doesn't have to go anywhere and pick them up.
That is an excellent idea.
But that's good advice, Jake, not only for her, but for everybody. If you're looking for this kind of material, the first thing you should do is see if it's available locally to you from your municipality.
Right, right. And, yeah, that's what I want to put out to your listeners is that, like you're saying, it's available and it's free. It's there for us, and we need to take advantage of it.
Absolutely. All right. Good man, Jake. Thank you.
Okay. Well, I appreciate you, and just keep on doing the good work that you're doing.
Yes, sir. You too.
Okay. Well, you take care.
Bye-bye. Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I will once again have the honor of lighting the electrical spectacle Christmas lights in Philadelphia's Franklin Square on Wednesday evening, December 23rd. That's Christmas Eve Eve. I'll ignite and then reignite those lights every half hour from 4:30 till 6 p.m. But don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with great ways to dry hydrangeas and more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, makers of Biotone Starter Plus for new transplants, full of beneficial microbes and mycorrhiza for deeper roots and stronger plants. Espoma, a natural in the garden since 1929. And by Harvest Right. Harvest Right's home freeze dryer allows you to preserve your own freeze-dried food that can last 25 years. Meat, fruit, vegetables, and ice cream can be freeze-dried at home. More at harvestright.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we will turn the question of the week over to a listener who has learned over the years how to spectacularly dry all the different flowers on the different types of hydrangeas. It's wonderful information, and there's even holiday decorating tips in there. You won't want to miss it. And you won't. It's coming up right after a couple more of your fabulous phone calls. At 1-888-346-9499. Barbara, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. How are you today?
I am just ducky, Barbara. Thank you for asking. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for asking.
And where is Barbara Good?
I am located in Essex near Baltimore, Maryland.
Okay. And you have a crying baby in the background.
I have two crying babies in the background.
Okay. How old are they?
2.5.
Oh, yeah. That's a wonderful age for, you know, paying attention to instruction. You poor dear. Well, what can we do to help this harried mom?
I'm going to be moving soon, and I want to take some of my tiger lilies and irises with me.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, with the move, most of the move is falling onto me, and I'm not going to be able to dig and replant those bulbs. I was wondering the best way to store them for the winter so I could put them into the ground in the spring.
Okay. Now, one thing I always like to discuss here, have you sold your old house?
No, the house is still up for sale.
Oh, okay.
And so, I'm not going to remove all the bulbs, just a few that are the babies from the mother plant.
Oh, how nice. What a nice thought. And the reason I ask, I like to repeat for our listeners, it's a little known fact of real estate law that when you move, the outdoor landscaping is considered part of the house, same as like your windows and doors. You can't theoretically remove anything. But if no one has agreed to buy the house yet, then that makes it a different story. The only other thing I would mention to people in your situation, and it sounds like you're not going to do this anyway, but I like to point this out, is if the house hasn't sold yet, you don't want to do anything to diminish how good it's going to look in the spring.
Yeah.
So if you were telling me you were going to take everything out of the yard, I would urge you to reconsider that just to have that little extra nudge towards getting the house sold. But what you're planning makes a tremendous amount of sense. But you are willing to dig them up now. You just don't want to go to the trouble of replanting them till the spring.
Replanting them, yes.
If they were spring bulbs, I would tell you that this would be somewhere between a tricky situation and something that wouldn't work. Because spring bulbs, like tulips and crocus and daffodils, they really need to have their roots in the ground over winter and then be activated by the vernalization, by the warming up, by the different angle of the sun. But that doesn't apply to daylilies or iris. So I would store them the same way we would store what are called summer blooming bulbs, like canna lilies, calla lilies, tuberous begonias, and dahlias. And that's you dig them up, and then you get a box, something that breathes, if you know what I mean. Not a plastic bag or a plastic container, but a cardboard box or even a heavy-duty paper bag, and fill it with moist peat moss. And when I say moist, I mean just lightly damp, not soaking wet at all. And then put your little bulbets and your rhizomes and everything there. You know, put some peat moss into the bag of the box first, then stack your stuff on top of that, then cover it with some more peat moss, and then just put it in a place that's going to stay cool and dark and, quote, dry. I realize this is going to be in your new house, which you don't know anything about, right?
I have an idea. I've been there already. So I do have a small crawl space under the home. Would that work?
Huh, that's interesting. So it's under the house, so it would not be open to, like, heavy frost and stuff. You don't have a basement.
Yes. No basement.
Okay. You know, now the only thing that I'm going to worry about, however, is vermin under there. So, you know, do you have any like, chicken wire or any hardware cloth or anything?
Yes, I do.
Oh, okay.
Yes, I do.
Put that inside the bag of the box, you know, line the bag of the box with chicken wire or hardware cloth, and then assemble as above. That way they might gnaw into the box or the bag, but then they'll hit the metal and you'll have the satisfaction of knowing they tried to get in and they couldn't.
Okay, great.
All right. Well, good luck, Barb, and have a safe and happy move.
Thank you very much. You have a wonderful day.
You too. Bye-bye. 1-888-346-9499. Matt, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hello.
Hello, Matt. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I am just ducky today. Thank you, Matt. Where is Matt doing well?
Oak Harbor, Ohio.
Did you say Oak Harbor?
Oak Harbor.
Yeah, where's that?
It's close to Lake Erie between Sandusky and Toledo.
Oh, okay. All right. Very good. Oak Harbor. You know, it's that. What a funny name, because so many of the best early sailing ships were made from oak, the tree of civilization. I wonder if that's a reference to it. Anyway, what can we do for Matt from the Harbor of Oak?
Well, I'm a graduate student, and I don't own any land or anything. It'll be a couple of years before I do. I do a little bit of gardening in the summer at my parents' place and experimenting and whatnot. But I was thinking it would be interesting maybe to grow a tree from seed. I know when you usually grow trees, you buy them, you know, a couple of years old, but maybe to start it from seed and then, you know, when I do get a place, be able to plant it.
What are you a graduate student in?
I'm doing ethics.
Ethics. You're never going to be able to afford to buy a house. you need to be in finance or consulting or something like that. And you're going to be going around, is it ethical for me to grow this tree? So where do your parents live?
Well, they live here in Oak Harbor.
Oh, okay. So everybody's close by. Okay. So we had a guy on the show years and years ago, and he really impressed me. And he's part of an association that goes around and preserves historic trees, you know, like the tree that grew outside Amelia Earhart's window as a child, trees that were under which famous treaties were signed during the Civil War. And in the book, he talks about grafting them, but he also talks about how to grow every variety from seed. And the name of the book is America's Famous Historic Trees. And the guy's name is Jeffrey Meyer, M-E-Y-E-R. And at least last time I checked, he had a great website that had all these directions up there, too. Now, do you have a tree in mind?
We had a summer home around here on one of the islands in Lake Erie. I think my great-grandparents planted an oak tree. I thought that might be interesting to, like, take a seed from that and plant. But
well, I think that would be a great idea. I mean, you're in Oak Harbor. Oaks are the tree of civilization. Oaks grow really well. And the fact that you'd be working on a tree that your grandfather put into the ground, that would be a double mitzvah. And you say this is on a little island somewhere near you?
Middle Bass Island.
Okay. So what I would do is I would visit there and I would start collecting some acorns. But you know, you could also cheat a little bit. You will probably find a whole bunch of baby trees underneath this tree from acorns that were buried by evil squirrels or somebody, you know, some other creature. And you could either dig up this little sprout and protect it, or you could just kind of designate it. You could just put some sort of marker around it, keep an eye on it, and then when the time came, you could transplant it to where you lived. Because one thing I can assure you is any tree that you start from a seed or even a little sapling that you dig up, every winter it will have to have its roots below the soil line and be outdoors. The trees we're talking about need a certain amount of chilling hours. They need to experience the seasons. So if you figured out exactly how to sprout the acorn, and there's some chilling and some scarring required that you can research, and you got a little sapling going, every fall right around this time, you'd have to take it to some place like your grandparents' house or your parents' house and just dig a hole in the ground and put the pot into the hole until at least springtime. And even then, after that, it would have to sit out in the open, you know, be exposed to sun and rain and everything like that. So okay. Go check it out, see if there's little saplings of it around, and if not, collect acorns and then just follow the directions that this guy has. But remember, this is not an indoor project. This is an outdoor project.
All right. Sounds good.
All right. Good luck, man.
All right, thanks.
All right. As promised, it's time for the question of the week. A gardener's guide to drying hydrangea flowers.
What? You get the week off thanks to Terry in Vineland, New Jersey?
Why, it's Alexis Landis, producer of You Bet Your Garden. And the answer's yes. I tried to help her solve some problems she was having with her hydrangeas on a show we recently repeated while I was traveling. And she just responded with a great email about her, quote, avocation of drying flowers, specifically hydrangeas.
This isn't really an email. It's a full-blown article.
And that's why we're giving her the spotlight this week.
Well, I'll start it off. Terry writes, the earliest type of hydrangea to harvest for drying is the snowball or Annabelle, also known as the June bush. It has round blooms that can be very small to quite large and fine, dense florets. As the name implies, they bloom in June. The flowers start out white and begin to turn green in July. Don't harvest them until the blooms are a uniformly vibrant green, because white or pale green flowers will shrivel. Cut the stems to different lengths so that the blooms can be staggered in a bunch, allowing air to get to each flower. She says that June bush is her favorite. Green flowers are special.
In her New Jersey garden, PG and oak leaf hydrangeas bloom white in August and begin to change color in September. The PG blooms are round to cone-shaped with dense florets. Oak leaf is cone-shaped with large blooms and fewer but larger florets. She says to cut PG blooms with some stem attached, but to just use the flower heads for oak leaf. You can harvest at the pale green or pink stage, or even later. Terry says that the completely brown blooms are lovely and keep their color for years.
Terry suggests that you cut the first blooms that appear on the classic mop head hydrangeas with some stem attached for fresh display, but harvest only the heads after new buds begin to appear on the stems. Those buds will produce the following season's flowers. For drying, cut the flowers from late August through November. Terry explains that these types can bloom pink, blue, purple, or white, with flowers large and small. The smaller heads have firm florets, while the ones on larger heads are more delicate, which makes a difference in how well they dry. Small heads can be cut early, but don't rush larger ones. They'll shrivel if the florets haven't had time to harden.
Now, the sequence of color change on these mop head flowers is going to vary according to their variety and the original color of the plant's flowers. Blooms that start out blue are going to take on a pale green tinge. Pink ones turn taupe, and white changes to pale green. Terry explains that the colors lose their vibrancy late in the season, but adds that she finds these muted colors subtle and charming. And if you leave the flowers on the plant long enough to be nipped by a chill, they'll develop a burgundy-colored edge.
Gently remove the leaves if you want to arrange large bunches of mop head flowers with their stems still attached, but make the bunches smaller if you want to keep the leaves in the display. Terry says the leaves dry pale green and crinkled and add a lot of charm to the arrangement. She uses pinch-style clothespins to attach the fresh flowers to her window curtains, where they dry in a week or two. But avoid direct sunlight, she warns. It would fade the flower colors. She says the room looks gorgeous when her curtains are in flower. Once they're dry, store the flowers in containers with lids. She uses cardboard boxes she gets from a local flower shop and tapes the lids closed to keep moths and dampness out.
Now, these colors will last 6 to 9 months if they're protected from dampness and direct sunlight. You can use these dried flowers in wreaths, arrangements, or just place them on surfaces to add some cheer to the winter months. But Terry says that her favorite way to use her dried blooms is on her Christmas tree. She tucks ribbon around the tree with clusters of small and large flowers. They don't need hooks and they're not breakable, which she notes makes them a safe decoration for kids to do. And she adds that her flower-loving mom won't let her take that tree down until spring.
Terry's philosophy is that dried flowers fill the gap between fresh and artificial. They last longer than fresh flowers, and while they're not as durable as artificial flowers, have the benefit of being real.
Terry concludes, I've been able to dry many kinds of plant material, but I've had the easiest time and the best results with hydrangeas. And I really recommend planting them, whether you intend to enjoy the flowers fresh or dried. The best locations for hydrangeas are the west and north sides of a building where they won't be scorched by the summer sun. After a heavy rain, be sure to gently shake off the raindrops before the sun can spoil the wet flowers.
Her email ends with this nice thought. Sharing this information has been fun. I hope some of your listeners will try drying hydrangeas, and I hope they enjoy their year-round beauty as much as I have.
Well, that sure was some great information about drying the many types of hydrangeas that I didn't have to write personally now, wasn't it? Luckily for you, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To read Terry's wonderful article over in detail, with links to articles about the care and feeding of these fabulous flowers, just click the link for the question of the week at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Gardens Alive supports the You Bet Your Garden question of the week. Yikes, my producer is threatening to mop my head if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499 or send us your email with your location. You're tired, you're poor, your wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore with your location at garden@whyy.org. Oh, and please include your location. And visit our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where nobody cares about your location, but where you will find the answers to all those questions you were going to email us about, as well as audio of this show, past shows, and our podcast. Elizabeth Perez-Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer this week is Al Banks. Our social media director is Amanda McGrath. Check out her fine work at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. Rich Banowitz and Lauren Elkins keep our website nice and dry. Oakleaf Alexis Landis produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. P.G. Al Banks is our editor. Mophead Stephen Dre Hobel is our ace production assistant. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and that just leaves me to be a June Bush snowball. Come to think of it, I used to eat a lot of snowballs in June when I was growing up in Philly. You might call them snow cones or shaved ice, but they're snowballs, people. Don't think they'd dry very well, though, would they? Anyway, go out and get yourself a water ice to eat out there on your stoop, and I'll see you again next week. What could be more festive than an indoor garden under glass? I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, we'll discuss the basics of crafting a terrarium, plus ants in your plants and your fabulous phone calls.